Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity. Normally, we would jump right into a conversation, but I do want to give a bit of a content warning for what's ahead. There's nothing inappropriate about what we're talking about, but we are talking about loss and grief in the context of relationships. And part of our conversation involves sharing stories of miscarriage, of loss of loved ones, and of divorce. The last thing we want is to cause any harm. We are simply sharing these stories in a very authentic and very raw way. So without any further ado, here is our conversation on loss and grief.
Well, welcome back to our Bound in Hope podcast. We're grateful you joined us today. My name is Darren Larson, and I'm sitting here with three others. Why don't you introduce yourself real quick?
I am Rex Gorman.
Hey, this is Tom McGregor.
And Christy Halsey.
It's cool to have Christy, who's not joined us before on the podcast, but her voice is awesome, and I'm grateful for her being with us today. We have a special podcast. We're in Relationships Month right now that we've been in the last couple weeks. I guess the last 3 weeks. We've talked about marriage a couple times, singleness as well, and now we're dealing with something that's a little more complex and maybe a bit more emotional in relationships, and that is grief and dealing with loss. That's our big topic today, and we're going to cover it in some specific ways through stories around this table. I'm sorry, in our studio that we have right here.
State of the art.
Yeah. And you're going to hear some personal stories today of how we have collectively dealt with grief in our lives and what it's what lessons it's taught us and how loss of relationship has shaped us a little bit and formed our lives and how we've clung to Christ and the Holy Spirit, who's our comforter during this time. So a couple of things real quick before we get started, just by way of introduction. One, so this is talking about not the loss of something you had that you lost and you no longer have. That could be a form of loss. I mean, honestly, it really could be. Mm-hmm. But this podcast episode is directly related to the pain of losing a loved one in particular, a relationship, experiencing a breakup, divorce, broken relationships, a loss of a family member through death, or even a miscarriage or child as well. And those are very relationally minded. And mm-hmm. I guess a word of just, you know, by way of introduction, this could be a little emotional as we talk about it.
Yeah, totally. We were talking actually before we came in here. This one might be a bit of a, you might hear a few people cry on a podcast. Mm-hmm. We don't know if Darren ever cries, but it might happen. So.
Yeah. And every story is different. That's the other thing I'd say with this, by way of introduction. I officiated a memorial recently of a man that was my age and who had killed himself. It was absolutely brutal. He left behind a 19-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 14-year-old. The family was just devastated. And it was one of those things that I got to go hang out with the family a little bit before the memorial service, and each one of them were handling it in different ways. This young man, I called him a young man because I want to feel like I'm a young man. I'm not a young man, but his dad was angry, and he was experiencing such anger, and he couldn't figure out why he was not sad. And it was really like this weird moment. Where he was trying to deal with his complex emotions of that. His mom was in maintenance mode, trying to care for the people around her, mm-hmm. and was not dealing with the issue at all. And you mm-hmm. could see it. Like, I could literally look and see it happening. And so loss and grief is weird, and it hits us in different ways. But because we have personal stories, and these stories are something where we can learn from and grow and gain empathy from, I think it'd be worth us talking about those things. So... So maybe by in that way, I'd love to hear, and as much as you guys are comfortable with, a little bit of kind of what you think of when you hear of loss of a relationship or grief that you've experienced. Christy, are you up for kind of sharing a little bit of your story and
sure.
telling us about what why you're here today?
Yeah. So I'm here because of just our experience of a miscarriage. We have collectively lost 4 babies. We lost our first, and then we had Jude, and then we lost Silas's twin, and then we had. Sorry, I sometimes lose track.
And how many kids do you have?
We have 4, and we lost 4. So yeah. we had Silas, and then we lost. And then we had Ellis. Mm. No, we lost one after Silas. We lost Silas's twin, and then we had Ellis, and then we lost a baby, and then we had Arden. So they each of the children that we lost has their own story, and it would take a long time to unpack each of the losses. But you know, they went with our first and third loss, or first and third loss. They were very much kind of a lonely loss in the sense that, like, it wasn't anything extraordinary. It was just, I lost a baby. I never saw them on the ultrasound. I just have a positive pregnancy test, and now they're gone. And that in of itself, while maybe not as traumatic as some of our other losses, was very almost harder to know how to handle them, because it was like, I have nothing. I just know that I had this child and now I don't. And all of the dreams of what that, who that child would be, is just gone. And it was a very, both of those losses were extremely isolating and lonely, both within our marriage and also with the community. I just felt like I didn't even know how to bring people into that, because I didn't even know how to process it myself. The second and fourth losses were different. They were more traumatic. The second baby we lost was Silas's twin, our 8-year-old Silas's twin. And that one, you know, I walked in to get the 8-week ultrasound and saw two fetuses there, and it was just terrifying, but also super exciting. But then I immediately noticed that one of the babies was much smaller, and that's while that baby had a heartbeat, you know, that's not a good sign at that stage, especially. And so there was very little hope given initially, but I prayed and, you know, believed that the Lord could just like supercharge that baby and, you know, make him or her be okay. And, but also holding it with an open hand. And it ended up that the Lord, you know, said no, and, took that baby home. And, it was traumatic in the sense that my doctor told me that, for the first 20 weeks of the pregnancy, we wouldn't know whether Silas would make it. Because as that baby that we lost kind of broke down, Silas's placenta could rupture, and then he would be gone. And so that was
frightening.
Very scary. She also said in the same, she said in the same conversation, well, at least you don't have to pay two college tuitions.
Oh man.
I'm sure that was meant to be nice, but it felt quite brutal.
It's like one of those moments that, and I couldn't even like, I didn't even know what to say. And so I feel like I wish I could go back and like defend, you know, but, so that's like one of those moments that made that even more traumatic. And then for our fourth loss, I started bleeding at 8 weeks. And so it was like, after that many miscarriages, like we're done. And it's been every other. So every other pregnancy, I basically just assumed. And so you start to have this really unhealthy distancing happening, emotional distancing from pregnancy too. And especially once I saw that, I was like, okay, it's over. But then I went in and the baby had a heartbeat and was healthy. And I was like, what in the world? But the bleeding continued, and I went in for the 12-week ultrasound. That whole first trimester was wrestling with God and constant, like, moment by moment releasing whatever he wanted to happen. It's littered with weird, I don't want to say signs, but like weird things that I God was already telling me the story, the end of the story, before I knew it. And I could only tell that by at the end, looking back and seeing his hand. But then at 12 weeks, we went in for just a normal appointment, and they couldn't find the heartbeat on the Doppler, so it wasn't an ultrasound. And they're like, it's probably okay. This happens a lot. They're little, they can hide, you know. But we went in for the ultrasound, and like, I can still vividly picture the stillness of this little baby. And And so, and then we went home, and I went into like a mini labor, basically, which was really weird because I had had all of my babies naturally. And so I knew every feeling and stage of labor very physically. And it was like that, but on a mini level. And held my little 13-week-old boy in my hand, and he fit right in the palm.
Wow.
And it was very clear he was a boy. He had fingernail beds, toenail, like toes, fingers. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. And super traumatizing to like hold your it was just like wrong. This baby should still be inside of me growing and being nurtured. So we ended up Kurt and I were just in the bathroom crying and didn't know what to do. It was like that moment where you're like, I don't think I can't handle this. Like, I don't even know what to do next. And but we did. We just kept moving forward. We decided to show the boys their brother, and that was really hard, but also really precious. And they helped their daddy make a little coffin for him, and we buried him, and that was definitely the most traumatic of the four, but also the most beautiful in some ways. And both Silas's twin and that baby, I can see, like, I had more community around me. I had I admitted the validity of my grief more with both of those, and I can look back and see this health, like, I grieved health in a healthy way. I felt the Lord carrying me because I was just very dependent and very desperate for him in those in those months. And so, yeah, I can kind of see them almost like groups, like the first and third, second and fourth, like, have some commonalities, which I hadn't even identified until I was going to do this podcast and thought more about it.
So thank you for sharing. That's vulnerable and very precious and emotional. I appreciate that. I want to revisit what you said a minute ago. I want to go around before, but I want to revisit the idea of grieving in a healthy way, because I feel like that's something we should camp out on for a second, because I imagine you've learned a couple lessons along the way in that. So again, thanks for sharing. Rex, are you interested in sharing a little bit about kind of what you're thinking of when you think of loss and grieving, dealing with loss?
Yeah, sure. So I'm pretty open with this. If we've talked for any length of time, and you know my story, I've probably shared some of this, but when I was, I guess it was the day I turned 24. Yeah, Kinsey and I were a few weeks out from getting married, and there's a lot of excitement and that kind of thing. My mom and my sister and my aunt were heading to a college visit, and it was a rainy night. So, but they we had had a birthday lunch. They got in the car to head down to visit a college campus for my little sister who was graduating high school that year. And I remember getting a phone call. Kinsey and I were unpacking or setting some stuff up in our apartment that we were going to share together in a few weeks. And there had been an accident. So we didn't really know what that meant. We didn't have any details or anything. So we kind of just stopped and prayed. Unsure of how to proceed in that moment, and again, no details are there, but got another phone call back from my dad, and we made our way down to the hospital they were being brought to. On the way down there, I got another phone call. My aunt actually, it looked like, passed away when the at the crash, so when it actually happened. They lost control, and so she passed away instantly. And still had no word on my sister or my mom. And we made it there. And a few people that we cared about, I guess my dad had reached out, started kind of making their way. And shortly after we got there, we got more news that my mom had died on the way to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Sorry. but they had tried for a while to resuscitate and bring her back, but it just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So it was weird, though, being there, because we had to absorb that news and still weren't sure what was happening with my sister. Mm-hmm. So praise the Lord, she's fine. She was unconscious for several days afterwards. They kept her unconscious for some brain trauma and that kind of thing. But it was just a strange, hard season. There's a whole lot of, even looking back, there's a lot of untangling of joy and grief there, just around, you know, my wedding, around,
you said 2 weeks prior to your wedding.
Yeah, it was about two or 3 weeks prior. We weren't even sure if we were going to proceed with that, but my, you know, we thought we could postpone. We thought, should we just elope? Should we get out of here? And, but I remember my dad calling us in, and said, no, you guys need to do this. One, we actually share an anniversary with my mom and dad. But, two, it was, he just said, like, we need, our family needs a reason to rejoice, a reason to be happy right now. He didn't want to like put that on us, but he said, we need to be able to celebrate. So, yeah, we proceeded, and, that'll be, how old am I now? That'll be 8 years, this September. So it's been a weird kind of wave ride of grief. And we can talk more about what that's looked like and the unexpected ways that's shown up and how that's fleshed itself out.
And it's still raw. I mean, you still feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's weird. You know, you don't think it's that raw, and then you say with the words out loud, and it shows up. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, brother.
Absolutely.
I know I've heard that story before, but every time I hear it, I feel it. I sympathize deeply with that story. So thanks, brother, for sharing.
Absolutely.
Tom, do you want to share briefly what you've experienced as well? Is this
Yeah, I think there's two kind of big things in my life. One is really complex, and it has to do with me coming to faith. So when I was, 23 or 24, I got married and then hit the road playing music and kind of made a train wreck of everything, and then ate the consequences of my, like, just self-destructive lifestyle. When I was 28, my wife wrote me a letter, said she was leaving me for somebody else. And so at that point, I was a pretty hard dude. I was pretty violent. Didn't really care about anybody else. Didn't really feel anything. Part of that was because I was intoxicated all the time. But that shouldn't have felt like anything. And I think God in his mercy, like, turned my heart on, and I felt the weight of that loss. And it's what he used to get me into relationship with him. And so I think the emotions surrounding that are difficult.
Yeah.
To make sense of. And she ended up leaving me for somebody else. So
right.
She divorced me. And that was a very quick process. Mm-hmm. But it took several years. Well, actually, it took about 18 to 24 months, which is about the time it takes for a heart to heal from relational trauma, to the point where it can trust again and hope again, and some of those things. But it leaves a scar, right? And that was a real loss. But it's strange, because I met Jesus through that. And then years later met Crystal and were married very, very happily. And so God's redeemed a lot of that. And so some of those experiences in those like short months around the summer of 2009 are kind of, I don't know, it feels like a different life, and in most ways it is. But the other really formative loss for me in relationship has been Crystal and I got married and started trying to start a family in 2013. And I think from 2013 to 2019, March of 2019, just experienced a lot of trauma in through miscarriage, but then also a loss of relationships as people around us just kind of got fed up with the perpetual suffering. So we had several miscarriages, but there were three that were pretty significantly traumatic. And so I think it's difficult for me to separate the trauma experienced, the loss of a hoped for future, that is never visible to anybody else. There's
Christy kind of mentioned that too.
There's the experience of that in your marriage, where it can feel isolating, or it can feel confusing. Like, why aren't you suffering with me, or the way I am suffering right now, or those things. And then there's that trauma in the context of community, and whether that community is your extended family or your church community or your friend group, whatever. The experience we had was that, I mean, a lot of people just didn't know what to do. And if you're in a situation by choice that you don't know what to do with, and it hurts and it's hard, but you're in there by choice, at some point you can choose not to be in that situation. And so we both experienced a lot of people deciding that they didn't want to be in that situation anymore. And we were like, yeah, we do not blame you, but it is really hurtful.
I bet.
So those are kind of the two major losses of relationship I've experienced.
I don't know if it comes through. Thanks for sharing, brother. I don't know if it comes through the airways as well, but I stand in kind of a sense of, it feels like a holy moment here to hear these stories and to hear the vulnerability that you guys have, and to know that there is a real depth of experience in here that is probably the human experience, all colliding in one podcast right here. And so, because I could probably share my stories of loss too, but it's not, let's not that I don't want to share them, but just for the sake of using these as a kind of way for us to think about loss and think about how we handle them. Maybe I'll just ask a few leading questions of you guys as we think about these things. So I think the one thing I'd like to start with is just the question of, and it kind of relates a little bit to, Christine and McGregor for now, and then we'll get to Rex's a little bit here. Like, how did you handle the grief in a healthy way, as you mentioned a minute ago? You could also share if you want to in ways you handle it unhealthy.
I was gonna say a little there.
But and then how did your relationship either grow or suffer in the middle of dealing with loss differently? Because my expectation, and I don't know if this is true, is that you and Kurt handled things very differently, and you probably didn't always see eye to eye on how it worked. So maybe those two questions will kick us off. That's okay.
So first of all, in terms of dealing with it in a healthy way, like I said, I can contrast the different miscarriages and see when I did and when I didn't. I think that the first thing I did that was when I did do it healthy was to allow the raw emotion of it all to hit me. Mm-hmm. I remember
to like not be afraid of that, to not push it down or something. Yeah. What do you mean by the?
Not push it away. Like, mm-hmm. Oh well, you know, we were talking earlier before we started recording, and not to say things like, well, everybody has a miscarriage.
Okay.
So
yeah, good.
You shouldn't feel so deeply.
Yeah.
This baby was barely even alive, and
yeah,
you know, this happens to everybody, and you know, you should just be picking up and carrying on. And and so I think allowing however it does hit you, because it hits everybody differently. Yes, it's extremely common, but that doesn't negate the seriousness and the sadness and the grief that is involved in each and every loss. And some people don't feel as grieved by it. But I think most people do, and maybe don't allow themselves
to go there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think when I did allow myself to go there was for the second and fourth that were much more traumatic. And it was like the first and third, I just thought, well, these are just your typical miscarriage. Mm. So, mm. You know, and so I think looking back, I wish I would have soaked in that emotion a little more. Mm. What I did practically to do that was, I remember I journaled a lot. I wrote a letter. We named our fourth baby that we lost, Stephen. Mm. And I wrote a letter to him. And that was a really big, big release of emotion for me. I looked for, you know, scripture and hymns and things to, you know, if you look at the Psalms, there's this pattern that God has given us, I think, to know how to grieve rightly. And you see this very raw emotional release and lamenting, but there's always this like corner that it turns, mm-hmm. and there's a corner where, and that corner that it turns to, if that makes sense, is hope, mm-hmm. and in a humble acceptance of God as the sovereign creator, mm-hmm. sovereign loving creator. And so I think that those songs, I even like would get candles and trinkets. Like I got Stephen means crown. And so I searched for this like dish that was a crown, mm-hmm. and just having that around, it was like this hopeful, I was accepting the hope in my grief.
Yeah.
And so I think that if I look back on when I did it in a healthy way, it was following that pattern of allowing there to be a release of this raw emotion and then turning that corner to hope, and just a humble trust in God. And then in terms of, did you ask how?
Yeah, hold that thought. Okay. So that was super helpful. Yeah. Feel your feelings in a sense, in a healthy way. That's great. As a point of levity in this conversation, you and Curtis are really good at creating boys.
yes, we are.
And that's amazing. Yeah. So, yeah. Maybe I'll turn to you real quick, McGregor, to mm-hmm. ask the question, to go back to the marriage thing mm-hmm. a little bit. I imagine to some level you and Crystal handled things a little differently in terms of, oh my gosh.
Can you imagine?
I didn't have this conversation before. I didn't know. I'm just assuming that's... 22 years of marriage right there speaking of, but what, yeah. how did you guys handle that? And how did you learn to give each other space when you needed it, to feel the feelings, as Chris, mm-hmm. you just said, and yet come together again in something so absolutely devastating?
Yeah. We are in so many ways, the complete opposite of mm-hmm. each other. But in other really significant ways, we couldn't be more alike. Mm. Emotionally, we couldn't be more different. And so keep in mind, like, we've been married for a year, mm-hmm. I've been a Christian for like
5 minutes.
Nothing. And it was a train wreck the first time. Mm-hmm. So here's what happened. Like she's having all sorts of pain. We go to lunch with my parents, and she had just been to the doctor, finds out she's pregnant, which is like, whoa, crazy. And we have to lead a community group that night at our house. And it's like the second one ever. And if I commit to something, you're committed.
Yeah.
Your yes is yes. Like, of course we're doing this tonight. And we don't know there's a problem.
I feel like I see where this is going.
Me too.
We don't know there's a problem. And then there is a problem, and she's having a miscarriage, and she knows it. And so this is everything not to do. I'm like, I'm sure it will be fine.
Oh yeah.
Our house is in Portland is a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 1,000-square-foot, ranch. And so there's 15 people in our living room, and she is 30 feet away in the bedroom having a miscarriage. Mm. And I think we need people to pray for us.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So I tell everybody, this is what's going on. And like, can you imagine like the pain my wife is feeling emotionally, spirit, like everything? It was just a train wreck. And then I did the silver linings thing of everybody goes through this, and this is great news. It means we can get pregnant. Mm-hmm. We'll have another, so if you're paying attention, write this all down and never ever do this. All this is bad. And then,
Do you think you were grieving there or just being a little,
stupid?
I didn't say that. Notice that was not my words. I'm not saying that. Do you think you were trying to deal with it in a very different way than Crystal was? Or do you think you just...
I was not paying attention to my wife.
Okay.
I didn't listen to her.
Sure.
I didn't believe what she was telling me.
Yeah.
I spiritualized things.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I did like the cardinal sin of operating out of ideals. Mm. And conviction rather than reality.
Fair enough.
And wisdom.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I wasn't grieving anything.
Yep.
And then afterwards, I just turned my emotions off and went into maintenance mode. Like, I understand that you're feeling sad about this.
What can we do?
You know, this is, like I said, this is great news. We can get pregnant. We can have another one. All the things that the sweet, you know, church member who means well says and just drives the spike further in your heart. And then the second one was totally different. The second one was about a year later, and I'd read some books, which is like how I do things. And the way I responded to it was by preaching through the book of Job. Every Wednesday morning at like 6 a.m. for 4 months, and then processing those feelings and learnings with Crystal, and it was better. And it was helpful in the long run to get a theology of suffering and understand where God is, and then not just make it an intellectual thing, but to share that and experience it together. But I still wasn't really brilliant about sharing the emotional stuff. That takes a lot of effort.
I hear a pretty consistent theme between the kind of, if you will, the good story, Tom, and the not so good story, and then Christy and Kurt's stories of like not ignoring or not glossing over something that is exceedingly painful, and how important that is. I think people don't like pain, right? They don't want to experience the feelings, and I don't think that's just for the cold and dead inside like me. I think that's for everyone. I think people just kind of say like, I don't want to go there. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to. And it seems like I'm hearing you both say from very personal experiences, that's the worst thing you can do in a situation where you're dealing with loss.
I think it's not only people don't like it, but I think speaking personally, we're afraid of the emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't know where they'll lead, especially like strong emotions, like anger towards God, or confusion about the future of a relationship and what, you know, I mean, specifically with miscarriage and infertility, the statistics are like 87% of marriages don't make it through it.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at it and you're
You mean a miscarriage, you're saying? Like
through infertility. I'm not sure what it is.
Okay.
With,
gotcha.
Do you know what it is for miscarriage? I would imagine it's a little bit different for that, but like death of a child.
Yeah.
So maybe it, like a late term miscarriage. Probably has some higher likelihood of divorce.
But infertility has unique infertility set of challenges.
Yeah, it's 87% of marriages don't make
it. Don't survive that.
So you're looking at those and you're feeling the tension.
And you think if I go here, then I might become a statistic.
I got to keep my emotions in check.
Rex, can I ask you a question real quick?
Absolutely.
Just in terms of what you're thinking, and then I want to come back to the question that you kind of almost posed in my mind a second ago. Like, is it okay to share disappointment with God and kind of think about that? So you guys think about that while I ask Rex a question. What did you need the most in that time of grieving, do you think, when you were, when you heard the news? How did you and Kinsey, you guys weren't even married yet.
No, we weren't married yet.
How did you, what did you need the most in that time that was, that would have been a healthy thing for you?
I think this sounds, again, if you've heard any kind of people sermonizing about the book of Job, then you probably understand it. But Job's friends messed up when they opened their mouths is the way it worked. They showed up, they sat with Job for, if you haven't read the book, you should. I'd say sit down and read it in one sitting if you can. But his friends show up and grieve with him after he's lost everything. And where they
grieve.
Yeah, that's it.
In quotes.
Yeah, yeah, they grieve.
Oh, the first 2 weeks was great.
Yeah, exactly.
The first, point. So yeah, that's right.
No, the first 2 weeks they were great. They were grieving with him.
Good point.
And they were
quiet. Yes.
And then they opened their mouths and started moralizing. And I think what I needed, and thankfully what I had for in a lot of ways, I needed people to be there and grieve with me at my own pace, not try to... Or in some cases to slow me down, because I tend to Romans 8:28 myself sometimes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And try to moralize a story before it's over. And in reality, that's not what that's for. So I needed people with me to either slow me down if I was trying to rush through grief, or to just be there and respond as I'm grieving, not give answers, not try to pat on the back. And there were a lot of people who said a lot of things in trying to be comforting that ended up they end up being more hurtful than they are comforting. But I had someone before any of that happened, thankfully, someone who ended up being at the hospital quickly, who pulled me aside and said, "Rex, I need you to know that in the next few months and then consistently for the rest of your life, people are going to say things that are going to hurt like hell. But understand that it's them grieving your mom as well."
Interesting.
He said, "So
that's generous."
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, well, he had lost his father,
So he had some experience
pretty quickly, in that last little bit, very suddenly. But he said, you know, you need to understand, and it's going to hurt. You need to understand that this is them grieving the loss of your mom as well. Mm-hmm. So they're not trying to hurt. So be gracious in that. There were moments where it was, you know, it's tempting to lash out or that kind of thing. So I think what I needed, and the way that it worked well relationally for me, was just to have a few people that I could process very, very raw with. Mm-hmm. And then a few people who loved me too much to let me either make light of what was happening by rushing into moralizing and lessons and saying, well, you know, God's going to use this for good, which he will, but trying to rush that process. So thankfully I had some of those people around who really helped. So
that's good. That's really good. Maybe I'll turn back to you guys again and talk. Christy, you mentioned the Psalms, you know, which is in many ways the textbook on how to deal with emotions in so many ways. I mean, you think, I was just looking up while you were while you were chatting a minute ago, the first famous verse I think of is Psalm 34 when I think of suffering, you know, where the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all, you know. Mm-hmm. You mentioned this idea of like being able to see the feeling it really, like acknowledging many are the afflictions. But then this other side of things like, but God is still, he sees, he's there and all that kind of stuff. But how do you live in that tension? How do you, can you express disappointment with God? Were you angry with God at some point? What did that look like for you as you were kind of processing the loss of your kids?
Yeah, I remember at times feeling like the phrase, what a waste, would come into my mind. That was like the most quote unquote angry I got with God, in the sense that like almost calling his plan a waste, which is, I guess, pretty intense. And, you know, I think as a woman, I don't know how men are, but there's so much leading up to a pregnancy. There's, I mean, it's months and months of just like dreaming and planning and, and then every day is long in the beginning of a pregnancy, whether it's the physical symptoms or the fear of the unknown or whatever. And so losing a baby at 8 weeks or even 4 weeks or that's, it feels, it's easy, at least it was for me, to feel that was a waste. And so that was a struggle at times. But I think how I noticed over about myself, and probably this is maybe a common thing among humans, is that we have a really hard time with negative emotions. And if we have a negative emotion, we just want to do what we need to do to get to a positive one. And we have a really hard time holding together a negative and positive emotion at the same time. And letting there be, just like we have a hard time with hard passages in the Bible, we don't want there to be a mystery, whether it's about God's sovereignty and his love. How in the world can we hold those things? Like, we don't want, we just don't want mystery in life. And have a hard time saying, well, how could I both feel anger, grief, and at the same time, humility and trust and joy? Like, how could those things, but they can be. If we allow them to be. And you know, it might not be that there's this marriage of all those emotions at once, but there's this, you know, there's these waves, like we talk about grief as being waves, and there's waves of, maybe there's a wave of anger that you release, and then you let that wave cascade over into hope. And so not to like push that away, but let that be something that the Lord leads you on the journey that he has you in your loss. And so I think that if I look back on when I would allow that, it was good. And it was even, I mean, you could just feel the redemption of the loss in those times.
I remember, years ago, it's been like 6 years now, my friend Tom collapsed on the stage here on Father's Day, and we had a lot of dreams together at that point. We had dreamed big that church planting was going to happen and all this kind of stuff, and I thought they were crushed. I mean, we all did for a while there, and I think everyone kind of dealt with that in a really unique way. But in God's sovereignty, we were going through the book of Ecclesiastes as a church at that point. And super strangely, 2 weeks later, I'm staying in the front preaching from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, which is famous, right? The bird song for every season. There is a, you know, time to be born, a time to die, a time to mourn, a time to laugh, a time to what? I mean, to think about all these things. But I don't remember my whole sermon, but I remember being up on stage and having one of those moments where it was like another God's spirit was speaking to me. Because I remember even saying during that sermon, is my God big enough to not only be in charge of the born, but the death as well? The mourning and the sorrow, the whatever it is, just these different pictures. And that was, to me, kind of mind-blowing in a way, to realize that God's actually big enough to hold both of those in his hands. And that was, and I know that interplays with what you said a second ago, mm-hmm. too, like sovereignty and, you know, freedom, human freedom, or whatever it is. But man, that was a lesson learned through what I felt was a pretty significant loss. Mm-hmm. God's redeemed that now. Yeah. We're 6 years later and things have gone very different. But McGregor, what are you thinking during this whole time? What have you been processing in this, in these questions?
I've always, because it was so formative, I filter like suffering through the book of Job. Mm-hmm. And so if I get long-winded here, then feel free to interject and we'll edit it out.
I'll bring the cane and pull you out.
Yeah. So like the way I think about my experience is, you've got this intro with God and Satan, talking about, this righteous prophet, priest, king, Job. That's a literary reading. So I'm not going to get into that, but he is a perfectly righteous prophet, priest, king. And, the Satan wants to, test him and, wagers his own life. He says, I will essentially in Hebrew, I'll be damned, mm-hmm. In the technical sense, not in the flippant way. If he doesn't curse you to your face. And then he afflicts Job with the covenant curses from Deuteronomy. And so he frames God. He makes it look like God is, unjustly punishing this righteous person. And I think that's what happens, in a world outside the garden, is that we have a real spiritual enemy that is trying to make us think that God doesn't know what he's doing, doesn't have a good plan. What a waste. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing that? You know, and we scream out and say some things that are really uncomfortable for people that are watching, like, shh, he might hear you. Say that so loud. And then you've got Job's friends who actually have pretty good theology. They're reading Deuteronomy and they're like, hey, all the stuff that happened to you is the result of sin. We're reading Deuteronomy. Mm-hmm. What did you do?
Yeah.
You can trust us. Mm-hmm. We spent 2 weeks in silence with you. We care about you.
We did the thing.
They do silver linings. I mean, like,
all
go through the book. Everything that is wrong, they do. And we continue to perpetuate because it's human nature. Mm-hmm. And then when God shows up, when God shows up, he doesn't give Job an answer for why, mm-hmm. or even say, no, I wasn't the one that did those things to you. Mm-hmm. But what he does say at the end is that everything you said was right. Mm-hmm. All of that anger, all of that confusion, like, that actually is what a righteous person does. Mm-hmm. And so, I think one, anger appropriately and honestly expressed at and to God is something that maintains relationship and actually trust with him. Mm-hmm. It trusts that he's there and listening, even if he's doing something you don't understand, and that he's big enough to handle your strongest emotions, even if you're not able to handle your own emotions, mm-hmm. which I'm certainly not. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that... it gave me a great sense of confidence, I think. I think the message of the book of Job is that the perfectly righteous prophet, priest, king who faithfully suffers unjust suffering is uniquely qualified by God to defeat evil and mediate God's blessing. Mm-hmm. In the end, Job restores his friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. He suffers unjust suffering, mm-hmm. Not just as the perfectly righteous prophet, priest, king, but for us. And, if he doesn't spare himself, mm-hmm. Why would we think we who are unrighteous would be spared suffering in this world outside the garden?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I can trust that God, even if I don't understand what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Hebrews. We don't have a high priest who is
unable to
sympathize in our weaknesses, in our failings, in our pain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I think that one of the themes that I hear and what I've experienced from you guys is this sense is that God's big enough to handle our disappointment in his plan for our lives.
Yeah.
You know, and that's an okay thing. Mm-hmm. As long as we recognize in a sense that he entered that world as well for us, mm-hmm. and he was willing to walk in there in our shoes of suffering too.
And I think we treat God personally when we react honestly, when we live honestly, mm-hmm. when I have those moments that say, you know, there's a mom who abandoned her baby, and you know, is, you know, somewhere passed out doing heroin, and yet my mom died. You know, when I say that and I'm mad at God, I'm treating God like a person, not like a system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm treating God like,
dang,
like a person who, you know, it's not the, if I cross this line, I get zapped. Mm-hmm. That's a system. That's not a person. And, again, like you said, McGregor, I'm not dealing with this cold machine that's doing, I'm dealing with a person who is acquainted with grief, a man mm-hmm. of sorrows,
yeah.
Who's
probably mad too.
Yeah, who feels with me. Yeah.
Right. I think that it's was not the way he designed the world, right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
I needed to be able to respond to God in that way, to understand that though my heart was broken by this, like this also breaks God's heart.
Tend to live in that. I want to correct people's thinking sometimes when I hear the word of like death is natural. It's a natural part of life. I go, no, it wasn't. It wasn't natural. It wasn't not the part of the plan. The flourishing of all humanity and God's design for mm-hmm. our humanity was to live under his glorious reign and rule forever and ever and to not experience the taste of death and suffering.
Yeah.
But of course, we live post-fall, and now it's not the design; it's the reality. Mm-hmm. But it's not the natural part of life, if you will. It's the unnatural part of life.
Yeah.
But to affirm that we should, like, it should be abhorrent to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good word.
Yeah, I actually remember sitting having coffee with a friend a few weeks after everything went down, and he just asked. We were talking about what's going on, and I just told him that like what's happened here feels other. It doesn't feel like a natural thing. You know, it doesn't feel like a part, an implement of the way things are supposed to be. It feels broken. Mm-hmm. And if you've lost anyone or anything, you understand that it's not like a. Well, this is a part of life. You can say that outside of it when you're in it, or you can just say that when you're rationalizing it inside of it. But if you're honest with yourself, you're like, this feels wrong. This doesn't just feel hard. This mm-hmm. feels wrong. Mm-hmm. So
I think I have to move us towards wrapping up because I'm not being a good host, because I think we could sit here and talk forever about these things. And I was wanting to do that. So we're a little long. But I think before we end, we'll spend the next just few minutes here talking about how what you've learned from grief, how you move on from, not move on, that's the wrong word. How do you move forward from grief in your life? And, you know, one of the passages I think of often when I think of suffering and grief is really 2 Corinthians chapter 1, where Paul's acknowledging that there is a sense of affliction that we suffer as people. And God himself has comforted us in our afflictions. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that we turn and comfort other people in mm-hmm. their sufferings, you know. That's kind of for 2 Corinthians chapter 1. You should read it. It's beautiful. And it gives it that picture of that. But so how do you guys move on, in a sense, move forward? Dang, I keep using the wrong word. Move forward in grief. And maybe that's just point one. You don't move on.
Yeah, that's fair.
You learn to move forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like what any lessons you guys can think of right off the top of your heads?
Well, I alluded to it earlier, but the one that comes to mind quickly is don't rush things. It is quick, especially, I think, you know, I came from a biblical worldview, a Christian home, and had heard the Bible my whole life. And so you can know God is sovereign and use that as a way of trying to fast forward grief. And that's not grieving appropriately. You know, I think you don't want to wallow unnecessarily, but at the same time, you have to sit in it for a little while. And I heard somebody, I can't remember who it was, and maybe someone's going to say this was a bad person and I shouldn't quote them, but somebody said grief enlarges your soul. And I think there's something to that. I think the ability to trust that God will pursue you into those dark moments and be there is, you can't learn. There's things you can only learn by going through that and not trying to shortcut it or dig a tunnel out of it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing.
I think for me, you know, I remember growing up always hearing that we should want Jesus to return and never really wanting him to return and being, feeling really guilty that
only
I didn't.
Only if I'm married first.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
if I have a kid first.
Right, exactly.
Only if I, you know. Yeah.
Totally. And I think one thing the losses of these babies did for me was to accentuate how broken this world is, and then bring me to a place of truly longing for Christ's return, where he will make all things new mm-hmm. and wipe away every tear. The hard thing that we have to admit as Christians, that we especially as Americans don't want to say, is that this life is going to be one of sorrow, mm-hmm. but it is one of where we can be sorrowful yet always rejoicing. Mm-hmm. And yeah. to be able to, I think in that we can move forward in our grief, because it's like this, you know, it's like this, many people have used that analogy of a tapestry of our, you know, our lives, and there's all these threads that's creating this picture. And we can't see what that is right now, but there's this eternal trajectory that we are on, and all of this grief, it's not wasted. It's not, it's not meaningless, even mm-hmm. though it feels like it sometimes. It has this eternal trajectory that the Lord is going to somehow use and is making even now significant all of our tears and all of our grief and all of yeah. our loss. And I think that if we allow ourselves, like you said, Rex, to sit in our grief and our sorrow, we automatically, when we do that, we just yearn for Christ to come and, yeah. and redeem things. Mm. And I think we should do that. I think that that is part of the Christian life, this side of eternity and post-garden life is one of sorrow and one of yearning and one of longing. And and we are uniting with like the saints of old when we do that. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. you know, a common cry of people, of God, of the Lord. And that has helped me continue to move forward mm-hmm. in past grief and the potential of future grief.
We sometimes forget that, or maybe just don't recognize the power when Jesus said, I'm making all things new. Mm-hmm. That was post his resurrection, right?
Yeah.
This was revelation. This was, I'm showing you what's new now. Like there's this promise of newness throughout scripture. And then finally Jesus comes and says, I'm doing it. I'm making it yeah. all things new. And that is such a cool moment, because it reminds us that we still live on this side of resurrection, mm-hmm. true resurrection. And we have something to look forward to. And that's a cool reminder, Christy. Thanks
yeah,
for that.
I love in, you know, we've referenced Psalm 34 in this already. It begins with praise, and then in the middle of it, he says, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He saves those who are crushed in spirit. And it ends saying in the last verse that the Lord redeems the life of his servants, and none of those yeah. who take refuge in him will be condemned. So I love that, like, the direction, the telos of our lives, even though they might be filled with suffering or grief, it's redemption. You know, it's God's glory. So,
yeah, I think for me, the redemption that comes is what Peter talks about, that we're a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And in America, grief doesn't have to enlarge your soul.
That's true. You can ignore it.
you can get away from it.
You
can buy
yourself
out of it. You can medicate yourself. Like, we don't actually have to And you can shut your garage door and hide out from your neighbors. But a kingdom of priests will mediate God's comfort mm-hmm. and blessing
to one another
and to our community. Mm-hmm. And so we have a choice to make.
Yeah.
We can actually step into suffering and sorrow and take that on, which I think is pretty countercultural, because if you have the choice, most people will peace out.
Yeah.
We can choose to not just be uncomfortable, but to suffer with one another.
Yeah.
And I know that it is uncomfortable and sometimes feels like a death to cry on a recording or from a pulpit or with a friend. To feel those emotions, to sit in that without offering some pithy theology.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think that's where God does some really spectacular work on allowing me to work with Him.
Yeah,
as one of His priests.
Yeah, I think part of that is also, you know, and there's a there's a line here. But I think part of that also is inviting people to suffer with you. Not just sitting with people and suffering, but I think part of it is, you know, trusting people with the suffering that you're going through for their, it's not just for your sake, it's for their sake as well.
Yeah. So there is that, but a lot of times we're not mature enough to do that.
Oh no.
And we
not.
Just need people to show up and sit in the ash heap with us for a couple weeks.
Well, that's more what I mean.
Refuse to leave.
That's more what I mean. I think it's tempting to, in grief, again, turn the volume up on other stuff, distract yourself out of it instead of reaching out, instead of inviting your community to grieve with you. So.
Yeah, and I'm saying, like, we don't.
Yeah, I know.
And so your community just needs to get with the program and show up and not care about the dirty house and the dishes in the sink and force yourself on your friends.
Well, if you want to drop the Jesus Trump card, I mean, you got to think of the story of Lazarus, right? I mean, there's this crazy story there where Jesus shows up on the scene and everyone's grieving, mourners are wailing. I mean, it's just a brutal story, right? And then Jesus goes in and weeps with them, right? Mm-hmm. Jesus wept, John 11.
Yeah.
And what's so funny about that is the dude knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Like, right? Like, I just called Jesus a dude. I feel like you should probably edit that out. But like, I mean, if he, the Lord of all, can grieve with people who are grieving, how much more should we, or ought we, to do the same thing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, sit in the ash heap. I like that image with someone else. And allow someone else to experience it. I mean, I've heard of people at Imprint who are part of things like Grief Share Ministries and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm grateful for those things and see some benefit to those things and would commend them to people, just as I might commend people to counseling if they need it or something else to actually experience and talk through some of the feelings. Or to, as Christy said earlier, I like that what her experience was to actually feel those things to make sure we're working through those things as well. So guys, this was really helpful. I know it was long, but again, I don't know if you feel this in over the airways, but this feels like a holy moment for me just to learn from my brothers and sister here about grief. And I mean, all of us, I think at some level, if you've lived long enough, can share a story of how grief has impacted your life. Some worse than others, honestly, but I think all of us have had some level of feeling that. And and so I think the community of Christ can be a place where you can experience hope in the midst of grief, learn to comfort in the midst of affliction, and learn to be comforted in the middle of affliction as well.
Yeah.
So I think to end this time, I might just tell you, if this is you today, would you surround yourself with people?
Yeah.
Would you feel these things? Would you talk to people about them? Will you not close your garage door? Take the advice of these brothers and sisters who shared today, their experiences, and don't just throw it away. Don't move on. Don't moralize it, as Rex said. Don't just think it's not that important, as Christy said. Like, actually process and think through these things and take that step, and maybe your best step at healing for your life. So, any last thoughts, or you think we should close her down?
No, I think you nailed it. I was just going to say what Christy said, like, your grief is valid. Even if somebody else has it worse, just understand that it's valid and it's worth engaging with. So,
Good. Thank you, Christy, for joining us today.
Yeah,
really great to hear your voice. And thanks for sharing you and Kurt's story. And and for Tom and Rex, these are emotional stories, and it means a lot that you would share them. I feel like there's a trust there that's a vulnerability that is so helpful for the church community. So please thank Crystal and Kinsey as well. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Thanks for joining us for our Bound in Hope podcast. We hope you've learned some things from this relationship series you've done. If you have questions, you can email us at podcast@imprintchurch.org. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us this week.
See ya.
TTFN.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.